Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Go for it.
Hey, all right. Hey, Nick Butnick here with SBJ.
Scott Winkles, League of Oregon Cities.
Oh, hey, Scott.
Nick.
Bill Lemon from Judicial is on.
Hi, this is Michael Crone.
Hey, Michael,
Hi.
It's Noah.
Hello, Hi, Noah. How are we going to do this? maybe we'll just run through the alphabet and figure out who all is here and all is not. Let's see. Oh, I know. My members, anyway. I just listed you all alphabetically in the report, so I will use that. Senator Beyer, are you with us? Jeb Bladine?
I'm here.
Hi, Jeb. Rob Bovet?
I am here.
Hi, Rob. Rob is with... Okay, Jeb is with the Oregon Newspaper Publishers. Rob is with the Association of Oregon Counties. Nick Budnick.
Hello, I'm here.
Hi, Nick. Nick Budnick is replacing Les Zeitz as the representative of the Society of Professional Journalists. So welcome to our first, your first meeting and our first virtual meeting, Nick.
Thank you.
Representative Helm. Representative Huffman. I'm Michael Crone. Senator Cruz. Mark Landauer. I think Mark will be on. Emily Matizar.
Yes, I am present.
Hi, is anyone waiting for me to just start saying Bueller, Bueller? Josh Nasby.
Phil Lemon is on.
Oh, hi, Phil. Jesse O'Brien.
I'm here.
Hi, Jesse. Jesse's with the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. Phil, who just spoke, is with the Oregon Judicial Department. Phil Lemon. Betty Reynolds.
Here.
Attorney General Rosenblum. Not yet, it doesn't sound like. Keith Shipman?
Here.
Hi, Keith. Keith is with the Oregon Association of Broadcasters. Robert Taylor?
I'm here.
Hi, Robert. Robert is the Deputy Secretary of State. And Scott Winkles?
Here.
Hi, Scott. Scott is with the League of Oregon Cities. If you are on the task force and didn't hear me call your name, hopefully that just means that I called it before you got on and not that I've forgotten you, but I'm going to give him pause a minute here. So if you're a member and you didn't just announce your presence, you can do that now. All right, is there anybody who's not on the task force but a member of the audience that would like to say hello? And
Hey, Michael?
Yeah.
Mark Landauer is present.
Oh, okay. Hi, Mark. I knew you were going to be on, so I figured you were just on your way. Anybody else in the anybody in the audience who would like to say hello to the group? That's kind of our tradition at the beginning of these meetings.
I'm Wendy Baker at the Register Guard. Hello, everyone.
Hi, Wendy. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is Kelsey Wilson with Gallatin Public Affairs representing the Newspaper Publishers Association.
Oh, hi.
Michael Morgan Allen from the...
Go ahead, Morgan.
Morgan Allen from the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators.
Bill Donovan, Northwest Public Affairs, representing OHSU.
Tyler Stone, the Administrative Officer for Wasco County.
Hi, welcome.
Kevin Horf, representing the Oregon Republican Party.
Hi, Kevin.
Dave Barenberg, representing a safe corporation.
Dave, you sound like your voice may be under some distress. Sorry to hear that. Hope you feel better.
It's on vacation. I'm not.
Okay.
Michael, this is Ellen. Just wanted you to know I'm on.
Hi. The Attorney General has joined us. I think we may be just getting through our introductions. Is there anyone else who wants to say hello to the group?
Michael, this is Les Rurick out by Arlington. I'll be listening.
Hi, Les.
Hi.
And we got a request from a hearing, hard of hearing person that we provide a transcription service. So there may be somebody, hopefully that's up and working and someone is following us via live transcription at the meeting too. I want to just thank everybody for being here despite the unusual amounts of snow that have fallen in the Willamette Valley and the consequent shutting down of a lot of our cities and towns. I know it's a little bit awkward to do these meetings by telephone. I've certainly never run anything like this via telephone. And I was also really looking forward to seeing you guys in person. I had this fantasy that our meeting would go smoothly and we'd get through our agenda in like an hour and then have another hour to just kind of socialize and hang out together and celebrate the season. But, you know, it's obviously not going to be a lot of fun over the telephone, so we'll skip that. We do have two agenda items, both, I think, very time-sensitive, so that's kind of why I made the decision to have the meeting by telephone instead of just canceling it. And the first one is to, you know, get feedback from the group on the draft of the report that I submitted last week. I actually have had it posted on the internet for those of you in the audience. If you go to the webpage, the Department of Justice website, and then follow the link to the Public Records Task Force's webpage, the report is up. A late addition, just like a few minutes before this meeting starts, is the prefatory statement by the Attorney General, which I have now inserted into that draft and also posted on the internet. So I'm interested in getting feedback, I think primarily on the substantive pieces of the report. We discussed the outline at some length in our last meeting, so I'm hoping there's not really a lot of surprises in there and that this part of the conversation will go pretty quickly. The second item on our agenda is the governor's office asked me just this week, actually, if it would be all right if they talk to us a little bit about their legislative concept for the public records advocate position, which is something that the members of the task force and anybody who's been following our work has probably noticed we've talked about a number of times. The the value that the task force sees in that kind of proposal and some of our ideas for what it might look like. So Emily Matizar will be speaking, and I think Kate Zinner from the governor's office may be joining her for that part of the meeting. So that's kind of the agenda, and it's very weird to be sitting in my sitting here just by myself and talking to all you guys without seeing you and trying to run a meeting. But if anybody has feedback on the report, I think I'd like to just start there. And if it would be helpful for me to run through it, then I could do that. But I feel like we did that at some length last week, so I'm going to shut up for a minute and see who talks.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of feedback, Michael. This is Jeb Bledin. I thought that the report was a really thorough and effective synopsis of what we've done on the task force. I thought that it covered all. Nothing jumped out at me as being missing. The one comment I think I had was the possibility of including something in the top portion of the report, emphasizing that I'm not sure what everybody would think about this, but emphasizing the fact that there's broad general agreement among the task force members of the areas that are being proposed, that it's not perfect, that it is, there's, you know, nothing is 100%, but that there's a general agreement of what we were able to do and what we see as upcoming, that it's a first step of a lengthy process that we think will be coming back to with more major issues under this law and perhaps reviewing what might be passed, the effect of what might be passed this year. And that there's some hope that people not pick this apart too much, that we give a chance for some initial changes to take place and that we continue on with a long process. So I know that's a pretty rambling, I think you get the general idea. I think it's just important to let the legislators know that this was a diverse group that came to general agreement on where we are.
Thanks, Jeb. That seems like good feedback to me. And yeah, I think the Attorney General's statement, which a lot of you probably haven't had a chance to read yet unless you're sitting at your desks and pulling it up right now, which you may well be, it gets into that a little bit. But I like the idea of including a similar statement that's meant to be more summarizing the overall sentiment of the task force as well, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, I think, this is Ellen, I think that would be great and actually probably belongs outside of my statement as a part of the report to really emphasize it, even though I think I sort of alluded to the fact mm-hmm. that we generally get along and like each other. That doesn't quite say that, but yeah, that would be great. Let's do that.
Michael, this is Mark Landauer. If you would just please mention in that suggestion that Jeb made, I don't have much problem with that, just that there are still some details to be worked out.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. I think Jeb was even alluding to that a little bit.
This is Mark Landauer again with the Special Districts. I have a couple general overall concerns with the report, if I may. And Michael, I want to compliment you for pulling this together. As Jeb mentioned, it's a pretty thorough review of what we have discussed, and I really do compliment you for capturing most of this, or virtually all of it, in this document. So with that, I hope that you take this as constructive and not being critical. The first thing that I would like to say is that I believe that this the way this report is characterized and written is it would appear that it comes from the entire task force. I don't know if that was your purpose or not. I'm not necessarily comfortable affixing this as a task force report. Specific concerns that I have. I think that you really missed an opportunity in the document by making an overall statement that the vast majority of public records are fulfilled on time with very little, if any, fanfare whatsoever. And that I think, is a very important omission that needs to be articulated up front and very prominently.
I actually think that's a very constructive suggestion. If I failed to do that, it was an oversight and not intentional. So I will
again, this is trying to be constructive, not critical. I'm sure it's an oversight, okay? But I really think that there needs to be some recognition that the vast majority of public entities are out there doing their best to comply with the public records law, and it's not there.
I think there's an opportunity to put information that we heard about that into that effect at the beginning of the report. Just to kind of go back to your sort of bigger point, I mean, I do think that it's important for this document at the end of the day to be a report that summarizes the views of the task force collectively and not just the Attorney General's office. And, you know, if these are the kinds of concerns that make you reluctant to go along with that, then I think they can be addressed. So I do think that we are working together constructively, that what you just said is entirely consistent with what we heard in the course of our work, and I'm happy to put it in.
My point here is that the bad actors are the exception, not the rule. Okay, and I just think that can't be overemphasized here. That the public entities, the vast majority, are trying to comply and do the best they can with the limited resources that they have, so on and so forth.
Yeah, and part of the problem that we're identifying is not bad actors, right? It's the complexity of the digital workplace and the complexity of the law and the interplay of those things. I mean, I think, I certainly tried in tone and in my discussion of issues to be even-handed in recognizing those challenges, and that those challenges are particularly acute for smaller organizations. But I guess if others on the task force feel differently, we should hear that. But from my perspective, I don't really see a reason not to include some more of that information up front.
Well, getting back to my point about this being a report by the task force. So, for example, why would I become uncomfortable saying that this is in part my report as well? I'm looking at the chapter dealing with exemptions, and one of the last paragraphs under that heading, under the task force review, says that nevertheless the task force believes that Oregon's exemptions are out of control. Well, I'm frankly uncomfortable with that statement. I know why there are 550 exemptions. There's a reason for it, right? I'm not necessarily of the opinion that it's out of control. I would say, yeah, there are a lot, but there's probably a rhyme and reason why we've gotten to the place we have today. Some of the wording I'm a little uncomfortable with, and that's why I bring up my concern about this being from the task force as well. There's another line that I highlighted. Oregon agencies often assert, sometimes correctly, that archaic or proprietary data systems cannot export the public records they contain. I don't disagree with the point that is trying to be made, but it seems to me that saying sometimes correctly is a little bit incorrect in that you're giving the public entities, public government.
Come closer, please. A little bit closer.
I'm sorry, I got distracted there with that background.
You can start this down.
So I'm just having some difficulty with some of the specific language contained in the report that makes me a bit uncomfortable. I guess that's my point there, Michael.
Okay, well, I'm very happy to take, and I don't know if I think probably going through and having the whole group here, like every specific phrase that is maybe worded in a way that, you know, people are a little bit uncomfortable with. It's probably not the best use of time, but I would be very happy to see those. And I'm sure there are ways of reconstructing those sentences that I would think would make people comfortable. And I'm willing to commit to working with each member of the task force who wants to take the time to send me something like that that will work on the particular sentences they identify.
Or the alternative is, Michael, that you know, you can keep this as a task force report, but not necessarily individual members agree with every part contained therein.
That's not a bad idea too. I mean, I'm trying to
be able to have some flexibility, Michael. I don't. The words contained in the report aren't necessarily my words. Okay.
Right.
That's my point.
Yeah, Nick Budnick here. I hear Mark's concern. I think some sort of language saying that there, you know, are some exceptions to support for every part of this report would potentially address that, but I also think rewording it would seem to be wise. As far as saying that to revisit Mark's earlier point, that the vast majority of requests are handled without incident, I just wonder, do we have the statistics on that? I just would hesitate to state as fact, you know, a sentiment.
I mean, I think what I would say...
Michael, this is Robert. Hey, on that point, and on Mark's point, I was very encouraged to read in the report the reference to the Secretary of State's audit on public records. And one of the key findings of that audit was the vast majority of public records requests were fulfilled timely and without incident. So you did say that in the report. You probably could, if Mark wants to see that emphasized more, that's fine, but that was in there. And I think that is a good factual basis for that statement, which is a key finding that ought to motivate any kind of reforms. That there are, we do a good job, but we do struggle with complex requests.
Yeah, that's kind of the basis I was going to point to as well, Nick, in terms of what the task force has heard. We also heard from a number of city recorders who came in and actually sort of gave us testimony about their work and how often it goes well versus how often it goes badly. So I think I'm fairly comfortable with saying something along the lines of what Mark said, although I think the chances of his words being my words or vice versa is also probably zero. So that's a good point too, that we need that something that makes it clear that obviously one person took most of the work in writing this report, and you know the characterizations aren't necessarily the characterizations that any particular member of the task force would give is a fine suggestion too.
I agree with that. I think there's folks that might choose harder or softer language on either side of some of that. So I think that's a fair kind of disclaimer to put in there. But I would also echo Mark and just say you did a very good job of capturing the overall work of the task force. So I appreciate that.
Thanks, guys. Anyone else wants to offer his feedback, particular recommendations, or again, we can continue to talk about language, and if you feel strongly about any particular passage, I actually would encourage you to just sort of identify that for me, and if you identify a passage for me, I will work with you and see if we can't get to a place we're both comfortable on language. So if you want to talk about them here, that's totally fine, but I think it might be a better use of our time to focus more on the substance of the report if there are substantive concerns or comments.
This is Ellen again. I think this has been a really good conversation, and actually I think this at this point, given how much time we've spent on substance, this is at least as important, if not even more so. So I really appreciate, Mark and Nick and Jeb, and Michael, of course. So don't take my silence as anything other than appreciation for these additional comments.
Michael, this is Phil Lemon. I have a couple comments. One is I'd like to work with you a little bit about the language about how the courts have interpreted and applied the public records law that is under culture of transparency, and I'll do that offline. But the thing that I thought might be helpful to bring up for the entire group to think about is, to me, the struggle in a lot of this is how to balance competing public interests. And those public interests are not always very well articulated, either in the statute or by persons requesting public records or in an agency's response to a records request. And I think that conundrum or complexity should be called out a little more in the report.
The balancing of public interest. As you guys are all talking, I feel like a lot of these issues are issues that come up in one section or another. And I think maybe what people are clamoring for is a little bit more of a sort of synopsis of these kind of overarching themes at the beginning that talks about, we learn that a lot of times, most of the time, public records requests are handled just fine and no one ever hears about those. But that the public records law, to your point, Phil, fundamentally requires a balancing of sometimes competing public interests. Specifically, I think that's usually about, it's either about allocation of resources or it can be about the need for confidentiality versus the need for transparency in a given situation. So that seems like another thing that if I were going to put it somewhere, I would be inclined to put it somewhere, it would go kind of at the beginning maybe in talking about the work we've done so far in a little bit sort of broader terms. Is that consistent with what you're thinking, Phil?
Yeah, I think so. Thank you, Michael.
Okay,
sorry, I'm making notes here too, so it actually would be super helpful if other people could comment while I'm typing. Anyone else want to offer feedback on the report?
Michael, it's Betty Reynolds, and it's just to echo what others have said. I think it's a very thorough report. It captures the consensus. I believe it captures the consensus of our year's worth of work. I really liked the addition of the Attorney General's comments, and I want to congratulate you on capturing some pretty complex issues from a very diverse group. So thank you.
Thank you, Betty.
Thanks, Betty.
Yeah, I wasn't here for this, but I thought it was a good report, and it seemed consistent with what we heard from Les.
Who's speaking? Is that?
That was Nick Budnick.
Nick?
Oh, that's Nick. You're new. New kid on the block.
I'm the new guy.
Great. Yeah, thanks for joining. Sorry to lose Les, but really glad to have you.
Thanks.
So, Michael, are we waiting for Emily, or do you have her scheduled for a particular time?
Emily is on. She's a member of the task force.
Great. Okay.
She can probably talk to us. I don't know if she wants to try to get Kate on the line. I had suggested maybe around 3 for Kate, but I don't want to keep us waiting if we're done with the comments on the discussion on the report. I think everyone's eager to hear from you, Emily, and Kate, if you're on.
Okay, this is Emily, and I am here. I don't think Kate is on the line yet. Kate? No. Yeah, so she may join us in the middle, but I'm fine to go on without her. So first, I just want to thank the task force for having me, both as a member of the task force and to present the LC, and I also wanted to thank Michael Krohn and Ellen Rosenblum, so thank you very much. So I wanted to start by just saying that the governor is very committed to improving the public records system in Oregon in the interest of transparency and ultimately accountability. It's something that's been important to her for her entire political career. And we also are very interested in collaborating with the Attorney General and the task force. So I am sincere in asking for your honest feedback on the LC, which Michael distributed, I believe, a couple weeks ago to the task force. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time going over it, hoping that you guys have already at least read through it. But I will give a little brief overview on what LC 747 is drafted to do. So the LC there's two parts, and first is the advocate and second is the counsel. So it creates the position of the public records advocate, also with deputies and staff, potentially. And the position of the advocate is appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. It is housed in DAS, and the advocate, him or herself, must be a member in good standing of the Oregon State Bar and serves a 4-year term at the pleasure of the governor. So the primary duties in the LC, as drafted, of the public record advocate are education and training, both to state agencies and local governments, and that includes advice on specific issues. Second, the advocate will serve as a mediator when requested by either the requester or the state agency. So in that role, the advocate will seek to amicably resolve the disputes over what records should and shouldn't be disclosed, as well as fee waivers and costs to produce. So whenever there's a disagreement on those issues, either party can invoke the advocate as mediator. So it's important to note that this mediator role does not displace the Attorney General's role at all. The petition process is still available. It's sort of before that ultimately happens. And then another role is if that mediation fails or upon the request of the public public bodies, then the advocate may issue advisory opinions on public records issues. And then lastly, the advocate for counties of fewer than 75,000 people, the advocate serves the role of the district attorney in resolving petitions. So those are the main duties outlined by the LC of the public records advocate. Then there's the LC also creates the Public Records Advisory Council, which consists of 6 members and serves to survey both local and outside public body practices and procedures. So that includes out-of-state, just sort of see what's going on around the country with regards to public records, and then make recommendations and ultimately submit to the governor and the legislative assembly a biennial report describing their findings. I won't give you the stats, but there's 6 members. They're listed there. We've already heard feedback that maybe we should expand it a little more, which the governor is open to. So the council members serve a 4-year term, and the council meets at least every 3 months. So those are that's the LC, and that's sort of the layout. And I hope that it addresses, I believe that it addresses a lot of the recommendations in the task force. But again, like I said, I'm open to hearing feedback that anybody has.
Emily, this is Mark Landauer. First of all, thank you for putting this together, and thank you to the governor. You know, the one thing that I'm really particularly excited about is the emphasis on the advocate being also an educational, having educational duties and working with local government and familiarizing them with the intricacies of the public records law. I think that that's something that we all strive to do through our associations and whatnot, but having a sort of a one-stop shop for that, I think, is really going to pay a lot of dividends. So thank you for that. I do have a question and a couple comments, if I may. The first one has to do with the mediation. I have not gone through the draft in great detail, but my understanding is that a member of the public can ask the advocate to begin mediation between the requester and the public entity. Does that also apply to local government? And so what I'm trying to drill down to is, does the advocate play as a mediator for local governments? It sounds as though it does, in particular for counties under 75,000, I believe it was. Does the public entity have the ability to request mediation with the advocate? It sounded to me as though it may be sort of one-sided, that the public or the requester may request mediation, but on the other side of the ledger, does the public body have the ability under the draft to request mediation with the advocate?
So there's 2 things in what you said I want to address. First, yes, the public body may invoke mediation. It's in, let's see, it's Section 2, Subsection 3. A state agency may seek mediation services under this section.
And it says
did you say state agency?
I did, and that's the second part I want to address. So as drafted, it does not allow local governments to participate in the mediation portion of the public records advocate's duties. I don't know why that was left out. I think it might be a resources issue, but I can definitely look into that if that's something that local governments are interested in.
I
I do think that that could be problematic because, again, there are instances where we may have a recalcitrant individual and we need to be able to trigger that third party, the advocate, to intercede. So I do think it would be a more balanced approach if either party, whether it be the individual or the public entity, can request the mediation.
Emily, this is Jeb Bledin. I tend to agree with what Mark has said, but when I look at the actual wording, it appears to me in Section 2 that it says any person may request mediation services when denied access of records from any public body, from a non-state public body, because it's not restricted. But then only a state public body can request mediation. That's how it appears, that reads to me. So one would think there would be a consistency in those two things.
Okay. Well, yeah, I see that. As I see that there's an ambiguity, but I believe as drafted, it is intended to be available for state agencies. So either a person, the requester, may seek mediation services when denied a public records request of a state agency.
Okay.
So, and then, or the state agency may seek mediation services. I think that as drafted, and I get this from the Section 2, Sub 1, a state agency, it specifies state agency in the mediation description. But that, like I said, that's something I can look into.
Yeah, Emily, Mark Landauer again. I think that either you need, it may be a state agency or the public body that includes local government. My problem is I think it's a state agency, and again, forgive me, I don't have the language in front of me at the moment. I think you understand my point, though, and I don't want to belabor it much. I just would like to have that balance where a local government, if mediation is available, that they can request that as well, and would hope that it can be either clarified a little bit more, that that is an option available to a local government.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'll look into it.
Then then two other things, if I may, real quickly. First of all, thank you for mentioning that you're open to expanding the membership of the council. From my perspective, I do think that representation of local government is warranted here as well. And so when I think about local government, I think, of course, about cities, counties, special districts, and education. So that would mean K-12, including the university and community college system. So we're all subject to the same public records law. And so if there's any possibility of including some member or members of local government, I think that that would add some value to the council. And then my last, I guess it's a question to you more than a statement, and that is you create this council, and it appears to be a permanent council. Can you give me the rationale as to why this would be a permanent council rather than perhaps a council that would sunset after, you pick the number of years to see whether or not the council continues to provide value? It seems to me that it may make more sense to sunset the council after a while, examine its body of work, and then make a policy decision at a later time as to whether or not that council should continue either permanently or with another sunset.
I don't have an answer for that question of why it was drafted to be a permanent council, but I think that sounds like a valuable suggestion, and I'll, you know, I'll bring it to my office.
Thank you. That's all I have for the time being. Thank you for allowing me to make a few remarks.
Thanks for your remarks.
Emily, this is Ellen, and I want to thank you for presenting this to us. I'd like to follow up probably after this meeting, but just to flag, I do want to have an understanding of the advisory opinion rule of the advocate. I have some concerns about that.
Okay.
Yeah, I just don't quite know how that fits in with what we already do and kind of how that would play out. So I don't, you know, if you want to respond, feel free, but we could also follow up.
Okay. I think that the purpose is just as an extra resource for the public, hopefully it would lend some credibility to the process, the advisory opinions. I'm happy to discuss further, to meet with you and Michael or whoever, but I think that that's the intent, just as, you know, an additional resource.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's talk about it because, you know, it's always great to have additional resources, but it's also, to me anyway, a little confusing about how that advisory opinion then, you know, kind of fits in with what we do, which, of course, is to issue, orders. So what's the difference between the advisory opinion and the order, and how do we need to then cite to the advisory opinion as authority when we issue our orders? It's just those kinds of questions seem like they're, maybe a little wonky, but very important.
Okay.
Scott Winkle, just go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I just wanted to say, it's not intended to displace the orders. It's and I don't think that, you know, it's not binding on the party, so it doesn't, nobody has to change what they do based on the order. So I don't know. We'll talk about it more later.
Okay. I want to make sure that I love having the mediator role, and I think that that's so important that we want to consider seriously whether adding to that role the writing of opinions is necessarily going to be that helpful. It might actually end up kind of an expectation rather than really the focus on mediation, which I would love to have.
Okay. And if I could maybe piggyback, this is Rob Bovette, on that, it might actually, just food for thought, and I haven't decided one way or the other, but it might actually detract from the usefulness of the advocate's mediation role, because there may be, as advisory opinions string out from the advocate, it could be that people are not interested in mediation with that advocate because he or she has expressed an opinion through a set of, you know, written opinions, and may actually impair mediator function.
Yeah, Scott Winkles with the League of Oregon Cities. First off, I don't know if you were on board when the city recorders testified or had their presentation to the work group, but this was something that the city recorders were very excited about. They really look forward to the idea of having a third party who can assist in resolving some of these conflicts, and you can, I won't go into some of the incidents that were described in that meeting, and I can meet with you offline as well. But I do have some questions and concerns about
how this, how these opinions would fit in with the current structure, because where do they rank between a DA's opinion and a and the mediator and the advocate's opinion? And it's always, it's kind of an, it's kind of a unusual setup in where you would get an advice, an opinion from the same entity that you're, that's mediating. That's not, that's not typical. Is how we, how these relationships are usually structured. But I will look forward to further conversation on this.
Okay. And I was not there for the city recorders. I don't think I was on the tax force yet.
But. No, that was before your time, Emily.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to set up a phone call or a meeting with the members who were present. They're all local. So it might be helpful. It might be helpful to you to hear the perspective from some large, small, mid-sized cities on how they. How they address their obligations under the statute.
Okay, I'll follow up with you.
Great.
Thanks.
Hi,
if I could,
sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
This is Jeb Bledin with ONPA, Emily. I think I'd say we really appreciate to see this area moving forward because, you know, we and many people on the task force have been very supportive throughout this process of some kind of a mediation, education, training process within this law. A couple of issues I'd like to raise. One of them involves the designation, as we've discussed, the public records advocate would not provide any mediation services to local government, but in this law, as proposed, the advocate would provide all appeals process for 20 of the 36 counties, those under 75,000 population. I think that is going to be something that people are going to want to discuss because there will be district attorneys who will not want to give that up in areas that will not want to. And I just think that is going to be a point of contention for some people. The second issue was I'm surprised to see Section 4 establishing what seems to be a very broad public records exemption for all kinds of things related to information going to the decision-making process on public records. I haven't really had time to think much about that, or it hasn't been addressed by the Newspaper Association, but it seems a very broad kind of exemption to me.
Yeah, so I know that that was intended so that, you know, parties would feel comfortable mediating and sort of producing the record to the advocate to and defending their positions and also in seeking advice on a public records issue, again, to feel comfortable that if they ask the advocate for advice that that wouldn't, for example, waive privilege over a document or whatever. So I think that was the intent of Section 4 there.
I understand. I could just see that being problematic. I mean, it's so many things have an exemption from disclosure because of what they actually contain, but this overlays it with a total exemption for anything. It doesn't indicate whether it's under 501 or 502 and so forth. So anyway, I just think it's something that ought to be discussed early on.
Okay, thank you. And I've heard that feedback before, like, Robert, I think you're on the call. The Secretary of State expressed some concern about that as well. So,
Rob Bovet, is Rob here?
Rob is here.
Oh, okay. Well, you should be the one talking about DAs, not me. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, and I sent Emily an email on the DA piece and looped in the two people that really need to speak for the DAs and not me, since I'm no longer one. So we got Emily connected with the executive director and the lobbyists for the DA's association, see how they feel about that.
Yeah, we'll work with them.
Yeah, great.
Yeah.
Emily, I have some thoughts on this, if now is a good time.
Yeah. Who is this? Sorry, who is this?
Hey, this is Nick Budnick with SPJ.
Oh, yeah. Hi, Nick.
Thank you. I ran this by some of the folks who are plugged into our group tracking this stuff, and they had some interesting thoughts that I wanted to share. And first of all, thank you to you and the governor for, trying to address these issues of education and mediation, which obviously there's a need for. We run into the need for education pretty frequently, even among well-meaning public officials that just don't have the training they need. I would echo Jeb's concern about how to frame that effort to protect certain materials and whether or not that would unintentionally hurt transparency. And I also echo Rob's thoughts about where do the advisory opinions fit in. We also have a question about how this fits in with the task force's sense that this position should be an independent position. It sounds like this person will serve at the pleasure of the governor, and I wonder if it we wonder if it wouldn't make more sense to house this somewhere else. One of our members who worked in Arizona talked about the importance of the ombudsman's soft power of persuasion, and how this in large part derived from the fact that this was an independent agency. And while we, while the folks at DAS have been good, and obviously the governor has expressed her intent to increase transparency in government, we wonder about, what happens when this governor is gone? So question about whether this could be housed somewhere else to create more independence and whether that would be a good idea. Secretary of State's office comes to mind. The other question is how the mediation would play into general deadlines. That's just a question that obviously we can talk about and figure out. And then the final question is how would this office be funded? Would it have a dedicated function, a dedicated funding source? Actually, I'm sorry, one other point is the makeup of the advisory council. It seems like a very government-tilted advisory council, and it might be good to have more of a public presence on that.
Okay.
Obviously, you don't have to respond to all these right now. I just want to raise them.
Yeah, I'll do my best to address, I think, every point you said. So we struggled a bit with where to house it, and and also to maintain independence. It is appointed by the governor, but it is confirmed by the Senate. So that's one way to try and keep it independent. And it serves a statewide function. It just made sense to us to put it in DAS. We started with Secretary of State, but that didn't end up feeling right. There's political, implications there as well. So DAS is where it ended up. I can bring that back to the people, and I can get back to you on if something else makes more sense, but that's where we ended up. Then the mediation, how the mediation plays into the deadlines. This is something that that we struggled with a little bit because we don't want to prolong the ultimate resolution of a public records issue. And I don't know if you saw that it is required that the public body wait 21 days since the agency received the request to seek mediation. Sorry, the state agency. So that the intent of that was to ensure that the state agency at least attempts to comply and to fulfill the records request, not to just instantly receive a request and seek mediation. I've talked with Michael has said that we might want to make that more clear, not with a timeline, but with sort of more language to show that in that section, and so we're looking at that. So I hope that answers the question a little bit. There are timelines, I believe, timeline requirements in this. So mediation shall be completed within 21 days following the request. We're trying to make sure that it continues moving through the process and doesn't just hinder the resolution, like I said. The funding I am less familiar with, but the public section 13 addresses the funding a little bit. The public records advisory account is established in the general fund. So that, I don't know if that helps to answer your question. Like I said, I'm not very familiar with the funding part, and I would be happy to take any specific questions back and get back to you on those. And I hear you on the makeup of the advisory council, and we've heard that from other people as well who've taken a look at this. And we're open. We don't want to make the group too large, but we're open to adding members, like local government members, as well as perhaps, you know, some more media members as well. So we're open to that. And if you, again, have specific suggestions, then let me know.
Great. Emily, thanks very much. Oh, sorry. This is actually kind of just a brainstorm for Emily and for Nick. It's Michael Crone. You know, Nick, you raised the concern about independence, and certainly independence is something that the task force has heard, and I think in general we all agree that that's important for the body to, for the advocate to be independent, to have buy-in on all sides. And with the fact that you're creating this this council as well, did you guys give any thought, Emily, to having the, you know, the sort of dismissal of the advocate require maybe some action by the council as a whole? Is that, I mean, that might be a way to kind of build some independence in. And you don't have to, like, agree to it or anything, obviously. I just wanted to kind of raise that as a possibility that occurred to me.
So I didn't quite hear all of what you said, but so the council could dismiss the advocate if they're unhappy with...
Well, just rather than letting it be at the governor's pleasure, a thought that occurred to me is, yeah, maybe it should serve at the pleasure of this council as a group.
I see. Okay.
It's just a thought to take back. I don't know if it's the answer, but.
Scott Winkles with League of Oregon Cities. I would actually lean more towards the way it's structured now. I understand the need for independence, but we've seen with that independence, I have seen it where that became an absence of accountability in certain commissions, and I would be extremely reticent to suggest that the governor should give up the ability to hire and fire this position. I think the buck does need to definitively stop somewhere. And I would go with, DAF may not be the best place, the general fund may not be the best avenue in this budget environment, but there does need to be a clear line of accountability. And I think the legislature has been going towards the direction of oversight and seeking more oversight on some of the boards and commissions, but the governor can't make that change.
Right. Okay, thank you, Scott.
This is Jesse O'Brien with Osprey. Could I put in a few comments now?
Of course.
So first of all, thanks for bringing this to us. We're broadly supportive of having this conversation, and I think it's an important one to have. And I'm in a surprising, perhaps, level of agreement with almost all of the questions and issues that have been raised by other members of the task force. I think those are the questions we need to be asking about this, but I think we can resolve all of them and that we can pass something that will be an important step forward for Oregon. I have a question that's very, that might be very much in the weeds, but that I think might be important, and maybe this is just revealing my ignorance of the existing law in this, and I'll preface this by pointing out, as I always have to, that I'm not a lawyer. But in the mediation section, it seems like the phrase good faith and making a determination concerning whether a party is acting in good faith is kind of carrying a lot of weight, but the term is not defined, and it's not clear to me that it's going to be clear to all parties what constitutes engaging in these processes in good faith. And you know, one of the takeaways that I have gotten from hearing some of the stories from public bodies and public records requesters that we've heard from is that, you know, one of the things that's often at issue is really whether people involved in this process are engaging in it in good faith, and there can sometimes be a lot of distrust. I mean, of course, that's the exception in a normal case that doesn't come up, but, you know, the reason this process exists is to deal with situations where that's a problem. So I'm just wondering if that term is defined sufficiently elsewhere in the law that it's not an issue, or whether it would be important to clarify what you're really talking about there.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, and I'm not sure. Michael, do you know about the – it's not defined in the LC, I can tell you that. But I don't know if we could refer elsewhere or if we should define it there. So that's, you know, that's a great point.
It's interesting. This is Michael. I kind of think that there are some lawyer terms that – get used in the law a lot, and they get used because they kind of have to be used. And words like reasonable and good faith are the epitome of that, right, where you need the flexibility to kind of look at the totality of a given situation and make what ultimately is a judgment based on everything that you see. I know it's not defined, but I believe the LC is clear in giving the advocate the authority to make that good faith determination. And honestly, it's a little bit hard for me to imagine too many circumstances would arise where, you know, the advocate is invoked and parties are actually trying to mislead the advocate or not actually playing the role they're required to play in the mediation process. I recognize that it's a little bit, you know it when you see it, but it's hard for me to imagine what the alternative would be. Like, I don't know what concrete list of factors you could spell out that would be a proxy for good faith in every case.
Yeah, and you know, parties can disagree about whether a record is subject to disclosure and still both be acting in good faith. I don't know. But I'll take all the feedback back and see
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense that you wouldn't want to define it in a sense that would create an undue sense of specificity around it, because I think, like, part of the idea of having the term in there is that it would be there to deal with unexpected circumstances. I'm just concerned that there might be circumstances that come up where people disagree enough on what's at issue there that it could cause problems. And I don't know how to handle that. I just wanted to flag the issue. And I also just want to express support for the comments made earlier around getting a little more specific about how the timeline of the mediation process would interact with the timelines that the task force has discussed. I think just putting in a kind of delayed timeline for the mediation process doesn't necessarily solve the problem, because it may actually sort of create, if it's not done right at least, it may sort of create an additional safety valve and just push the process back so that it takes longer. I think it's possible to avoid that by being more explicit in the LC than in the bill, but I do think it's important to do that.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Emily, it's Betty Reynolds. And I wanted to thank you for the concept and your explanation. I think the concept will be very, very helpful in carrying out the recommendations of the task force. One of the recommendations is to consider giving the advocate authority with respect to Oregon public meetings laws as well. And part of the rationale is that the current remedy in Chapter 192 is to file in circuit court, which I think is very daunting to the public. And I acknowledge that the scope of the task force and your LC is public records, but I wonder if you have comments regarding that recommendation and or your position if an amendment to that effect is proposed.
I read the report and saw that, and it's not contemplated in the LC as is. It's a little tough for me because I came in a little late in the process, so I don't know if that was discussed. I can find out, and if there's a reason for it not being in, but I will definitely, look into that. That's the best I can do for now.
Okay, it's my understanding that your LC was in progress before this particular recommendation took form. So,
okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Just for the record, Osberg is on record as supporting that recommendation as well. So we would appreciate it if you took it under consideration.
Okay.
And Emily, this is Michael. I actually also think it's a good idea, and it's one that other members of the task force have raised, too. I do wonder if it maybe makes sense to do this a little bit incrementally, and I would encourage you guys, when you're thinking about it, to not just see it as, like, we either do it now or never. It may make sense to get the office established and sort of, I mean, we have 40 years of mess in the public records law, and we have 40 years of, I think, less mess in the public meetings law, but the enforcement area is one we do hear a lot of complaints about. Even at some of our public hearings where we're, specifically telling people we're interested in the public records law, people would come and talk about that issue. But, again, I don't know that we need to solve the problems at once, but I do think it's worth considering whether it's a good idea in this cycle, so appreciate that.
End of line.
Does anybody else have any feedback on the LC?
This is Kevin Hoare from the Oregon Republican Party. We've been participating, or at least listening to many of these task force meetings, and appreciate the process and appreciate the proposal that you've got here. I was looking at the membership of the council,
mm-hmm.
and I do wonder if it wouldn't be possible to have more members of the media and the public composing the council, so it's not just people running the government overseeing this aspect of the government. In particular, also, I think that in the case of the news media, could we designate certain entities, such as the one that that Nick Budnick is a member of, the Society of Professional Journalists, for instance, to be the ones who select or nominate somebody to fulfill that role. That way it's not the favorite journalist of the governor, but instead just somebody who's broadly representative of the of journalists and their concerns.
Yeah, I can look into that, and sounds like a fair idea.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
We certainly would have suggestions. Thanks.
Michael, can I say just a brief word?
Is that Mr. Rourke?
And I'd like to address this specifically to the governor's staff. From out here amongst the hinterlands, Emily, I think this is a really exciting and a very appropriately far-reaching beginning. And, you know, I'm going to do what I can to participate in the process to try and improve it a little bit, but I want you to be aware of that. And I think that if there's any... if there's anything on this particular public records and open meetings front that's going to gain traction this session, aside from the Attorney General's good effort, it's going to be this effort. So that's what I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Well, if nobody else has any comments or questions for Emily, that's the last thing on our formal agenda for today. So anyone, this is kind of your last chance.
I'd just like to once again thank everyone so much. I am sorry we weren't able to socialize together a little bit at the end of the meeting as Michael had hoped, but and I did as well. But we saved a little money on coffee, so we'll have better treats next time. And I wanted to wish you all happy holidays. And just thank you for your real commitment to this. We're at a very important and I think really good point to move forward with all the work that you've put into it. And so special thanks to Michael, of course, but to all of you. And Emily, thanks for being with us on this topic.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, thanks to everyone. I really want to second what the Attorney General just said about the participation of all the members of this group. I think we've, you know, we have not solved the world of public records in a year, but we didn't get to where we are in a year either. And I think that the willingness of people on all sides of this issue to just really come together, hammer out areas where we could find agreement for a path forward to start to address these issues has just been really inspiring and fun to be a part of. So I've been grateful to all of you throughout the process. I want to remind you guys that we have tentatively decided we will not be meeting again until after the legislative session, though we may call a meeting if it looks like events in the legislature warrants a meeting of this group. But otherwise, this is going to be the convening of our last meeting for quite a while, and it feels very strange to bring it to a conclusion by just hanging up on everybody.
Well, actually, Michael, don't hang up yet, because I think given some of the input into this discussion, we are going to need to follow up with some revisions, correct?
I think so, but I think that we'll be able to do that without – I don't get the sense that we need another meeting of the group to do that.
Right, but I just want everybody to know that we will be following up.
Yeah.
We'll provide you with the updated changes. So thank you for the input today.
Yeah, and I wasn't actually planning on just hanging up on you guys at the end of the meeting either, but at some point we're all going to have to do that. I think it's a strange way to walk away from a meeting. So
hopefully you didn't take me literally when I said I was going to hang up on you.
Well, I'm actually hanging up on you guys because I got to run, but thank you, Michael, so you can close it out.
Yep, and with that, I think we'll call this meeting adjourned and wish everyone a happy holiday season and a wonderful few days of snow.
Yep, great job, Michael. We appreciate all your work.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Yep.
Take care.
Happy holidays. Thank you.
Happy holidays.